You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. If you live in a city or town that dates back to before World War II, you've got a main street, you've got parks, you can walk around town to restaurants and stores and such. Cities that sprouted up after the war, not so much. Those are largely shopping strips, office buildings, maybe a mall, plenty of subdivisions, and you definitely need a car. There's no downtown that's really the center of the community. One such post-war city is Troy. It's Oakland County's most populous city. And our next guest has a plan to create a true downtown for Troy based on a concept called New Urbanism. Urban planner Bob Gibbs is the man behind the plan, the man who helped create New Urbanism 25 years ago. And he spoke with Stateside's Cynthia Canty.
Bob, welcome to Stateside. It's so good to have you with us.
Good afternoon.
So what is it about the sprawling way so many of our cities are designed that you don't like? I mean, what are cities like Troy missing when they don't have a downtown?
I think there's a lack of community and a lack of walkability. You have to drive everywhere. You have to drive to work, drive your kids to school. The kids can't be free. We call the new way of planning free-range children so that children can run around to schools and playgrounds. So I think it's a prescripted way of life that people are rejecting. It's also compartmentalized. You live in an apartment complex when you're young and there's just apartment complex dwellers there, and then you move into a small single-family home, and then you move up to a larger single-family home. And everything is segregated, and there's not really diversity of incomes and age groups that I think a lot of people like to have.
Full transparency here. I lived in Troy at one time, and we loved the home. We loved the neighborhood. We had young kids. And what I remember, contrasting to where I grew up in the city of Ferndale, which is a very old town from the early 20th century, where we had the porches and people would be out front and we'd be up and down playing, everybody did everything behind. You saw nothing from the front. People had their decks on the back and then that common green area, and the kids would kind of play in there. But I get what you're saying about being insular.
Right. And when you outgrow your home, you have to make a new set of friends. Often you have to move to a new location. And we try to create neighborhoods where you can move up and move down so that you can have your first starter apartment there. You can move up into a larger home, still be in the same neighborhood with your friends. When you retire or when you move into an assisted living place, you can still keep your same friends in the same neighborhood. And that's really what a neighborhood is. It's where you have a variety of income and age groups, where you can walk to schools, you can walk to shopping, you can walk to get your daily needs so that you don't always have to drive.
And it strikes me that not driving is driven by groups on either end of the age spectrum.
That's right. About 15 to 20% of the population doesn't drive in this country. And unfortunately, they're really forced to live in unwalkable places where they have to be driven all the time. Children should not have to be driven all the time to school or to playgrounds or to workplaces.
And we're seeing millennials. We've certainly heard this very common theme that millennials are way less interested in owning a car than we baby boomers were, where we couldn't wait to get our license when we were 16.
Yeah, it's so true. The millennials really dislike driving. They want to live and work in walkable places. In Troy, for example, there's been a spike in office vacancies because many of the leading corporations are moving downtown Detroit or to Royal Oak or Birmingham. Because in order to attract the 20-year-olds, they have to offer them a walkable urban center. A lot of millennials don't want to work in an office park where they have to get in the car and drive to a chain restaurant to get lunch. They like the diversity. So it makes good business sense.
And then speaking of baby boomers, my generation is getting older. And so as we see America age and kids take away the keys, you're trapped then too if you're not in a walkable neighborhood.
Right. Everybody likes aging in place where they raise their family, where they have a 3 or 4 or 5 bedroom home until they lose their car or until their spouse dies. And then that big home becomes very lonely and they become very isolated. So we're trying to give a more walkable, livable environment for seniors. And the new urbanism isn't for everybody. About 1/3 of Americans really dislike living in walkable mixed-use communities. But about 2/3 love it. And they'll pay about 10 to 20% more to live in a walkable community. Unfortunately, the building industry doesn't build new urbanism today. Less than 1% of the homes being built today are being built that way. So you have a 60% demand and a 1% supply.
Huh. When we say new urbanism, exactly how do you define what that is?
It's a planning movement based on the types of planning that occurred pre-war in the 1910s and 1920s, where we built neighborhoods that have a variety of housing stocks and a variety of land uses, like civic uses, recreational uses, schools and churches and community centers. It's called new urbanism because we're adapting it to modern lifestyles and to cars and to semi-trucks so that the neighborhoods are designed to accommodate large SUVs and large cars, which are hard to accommodate in some of the old neighborhoods.
And something that, because I've lived in Birmingham, I've lived in Ferndale, so we are talking about that kind of pre-war community, and I've lived in Troy. Neighborhoods are connected, so you can really walk around. And I've lived in an area where we were isolated by a busy road. This wasn't in Troy, but with a gravel shoulder and no sidewalk. And I can still remember trying to push our son's baby stroller up the hill of that gravel going, well, this isn't going to work. We had just moved from Birmingham. Welcome to no more walkable neighborhoods.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's mostly what's being built today are unwalkable neighborhoods. In fact, a lot of the subdivisions don't even have sidewalks, let alone a corner store or a church or school to walk to.
Yeah, we were in a 60s colonial subdivision with no sidewalks. So when you talk about having sidewalks, having connected neighborhoods so you can get out, the kids can ride their bikes, you can walk, I really see what you're talking about. And you're saying all kinds of housing for all kinds of people.
That's right.
So what would this look like in the plan that you've come up with for Troy?
The Troy property is about 125 acres. That's city-owned land. It's underutilized land. It's just sort of leftover land around the city hall and the library and police station and courthouse and some recreational uses.
Certainly cross streets are great, yeah, because that's Big Beaver and I-75.
Right. It's a great location, probably the central, one of the best locations in southeast Michigan. And Troy, as you know, doesn't have a downtown, and they wanted to have a downtown. The city was concerned about the high vacancies in office rate. And they're concerned that there isn't a real alternative to the large suburban homes that they have. So the center will include about 850 residential units, all types of units from the move-in first loft, the move-up house, to the cottage home, to the senior housing. It'll include about 40 to 50 retail shops and restaurants, a new civic building. We're not sure what it'll be, but we reserve the best site for a future civic building like a performing arts center. And it'll include about 25 to 30 acres of parks, a five-acre lake, a hotel, really everything necessary for what we call a complete neighborhood.
Now, I would imagine in a lot of these communities, when you're talking about Novi and Sterling Heights and Troy, carving out enough land can be a challenge to make a really impactful downtown. In this instance, you've got the city's land.
That's right. In Troy, we have plenty of land. And it's nice to have 40 to 50 acres at a minimum to do these, but we've done them as little as 10 acres. We did one in Beverly Hills called Westwood Commons, just on 10 acres. We built a little neighborhood around an English square.
Because you don't want something, I guess, that looks, that is masked as a downtown, but it's really just a gussied up shopping strip.
That's right. A lot of developers are building what they call town centers, which are suburban shopping centers with colonial facades on them and nice landscaping, but they're still single purpose, single use, drive to only shopping centers.
What about any pushback from the community?
So far, we haven't heard any negative comments at all. The city council, the planning commission was behind it. I've done probably a dozen or two dozen public presentations. And the number one question is, how soon can I move in there? That's usually what we hear. Because we are providing a five-acre lake for the community that doesn't have a real public lake, providing 25 acres of parks and a lot of housing types. So there's been a lot of enthusiasm about it. I expect there will be some people that will be opposed to it. Some people are opposed to any change at all. That's just human nature. But so far, the public presentations we've done has been very enthusiastic. Even a lot of city workers, one of the police officers came up to me and said she would really like to live there, for example.
Looking at this as something that other cities may want to look at and consider, are you able to raise a city's tax rolls this way?
They do pay for themselves. In the Troy's model, for example, we were asked by the city to design something that wouldn't cost the city any money. It had to be revenue neutral. As it turns out, it'll make tens of millions of dollars for the city.
Because
the city will sell the land or ground lease the property. and it'll create a lot of property tax revenues for the city. So it's sort of a win-win. It doesn't cost the city any money. It raises money. It provides a tax base. It provides a needed neighborhood for the downtown. It'll help, I think, fill office spaces because office workers then can walk or ride their bikes or drive to a nice town center. It is a perfectly scalable process. We're doing one in Warren right now just on 5 acres, for example. We're building a town center for Warren that'll include a hotel, residential, retail shops, restaurants around the city hall. It doesn't have to be 40 or 50 acres.
This philosophy of new urbanism, Bob Gibbs, do you think this is something whose time has come in Michigan and across the country?
I really do. There's a very unique market demand where the millennials and the baby boomers, the 65-year-olds and the 20-year-olds, both want the same house. They want a compact 2.5-bedroom multifamily house in a walkable neighborhood. And never before in history has the two largest demographic groups wanted the same housing type. And turns out they like to live next to each other.
That's fascinating. Well, what kind of timetable are you on?
For Troy, the city is seeking developer qualifications right now to pick a developer. It's probably a 2 to 5 year time frame for Troy to build itself out. But I have seen these built in as short as 24 months. Atlanta has one called Avalon, which has been built in 24 months. By the way, Southeast Michigan is the only major region in the United States that doesn't have a new urban town center. Every other city, Atlanta, Charlotte, Los Angeles, Phoenix, has built several town centers. And we think Southeast Michigan, with its 5 million population, can probably support 10 to 12 Troy-type town centers.
Certainly we've seen downtown Detroit, not new, but it's become renovated and changed, and it's in a transformation. So we have that, which you might not see in Arizona.
Right. And downtown Detroit has been a tremendous successful story, as all of our towns, Plymouth, Northville, Birmingham, Royal Oak, Ferndale, the Grosse Pointes, they're really hyperinflating in value because of the demand by the 20-year-olds and the senior and the empty nesters.
Fascinating stuff. Urban planner Bob Gibbs, as we talk about new urbanism. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.